While the Census Day has been moved, we look at the U.S. Census today. In the new book, The Sum of the People, economist and data scientist Andrew Whitby traces the remarkable history of the census from ancient China through the Roman Empire, revolutionary America, and Nazi-occupied Europe right up to the recent Supreme Court battle. The impulse to count ourselves seems universal, and while censuses have evolved over time, they have always been deeply political as both instruments of power and tools for those fighting for inclusion. Again, the name of the book is The Sum of the People, How the Census Has Shaped Nations from the Ancient World to the Modern Age. And it's a pleasure to welcome Andrew Whitby to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Great to be talking to you.
So before we talk about the book, give us a sense of where our census is now. It has been delayed. Normally, April 1st is Census Day. So where are we now? And can you at all get an idea of what impact this will have on our census?
Yeah, I mean, we know what impact it's having already. So like you say, Census Day is April 1, as we're doing this interview. At the moment, about, I think, 36% of people have responded to the census through self-response. That's online or by phone or by mailing back a form. That number, they were, I think, aiming to get to about 60%. So that's the number of people who would respond online. But what happens is there's a large number of people who don't respond. And then the Census Bureau has to send people around to knock on doors and do interviews in person. And that's the kind of the field work part of the census. That's the traditional part of the census. And that part is delayed. So all of the census field work from a few weeks ago was delayed first by 2 weeks and now by another 2 weeks. So April 15 is the current date when they're going to be, they say resuming field work, but I think realistically probably reassessing where that's at, depending on what happens in the wider world.
What impact does that have, do you think, overall, a delay like this in the information that we will get for months and years beyond this period of collection?
That depends a bit. The Census Bureau has a lot of information on people, even outside of what they collect in person. So there's a lot of what are called administrative records that they can use to try and understand who lives in a house, whether they get to visit it or not. And so that might help to a great degree to fill in the gaps in what they actually are able to get through self-response or through field work. But the problem is there are people who just don't exist in those records, right? And they're typically the same people who don't respond themselves to the census. And so I think the most likely impact is that there'll be certain groups of people, and it tends to be people who are already disadvantaged in society, right? People of color, immigrants, undocumented people. Those people we're probably going to have less information about out of this census, unless the fieldwork can really kick into gear once the immediate COVID crisis is over.
I mentioned this in the introduction, but for millennia, censuses have shaped societies around the globe, classifying people and determining who belongs and who doesn't. Give us a sense of that history, because I think that's surprising to many people that this idea of the count has been around for so long.
Yeah, so one of the things I wanted to look into when I sat down to write this book was, well, you know, is there an identifiable first census that anybody can agree on? And there really isn't. As far as you go back, you can find history or historical evidence of censuses. So the Roman Republic, for instance, is where we get the word census from. They had a really elaborate system of not just counting people, but kind of assessing their resources and sort of stratifying them into this class system of the Roman Republic. And so that's in the BC years. But you can go back even further than that, and you find these kind of stories in what I would classify as mythology of the Old Testament, the Bible, or in Chinese mythology of early emperors who are taking counts of people in order to do large public works or to conscript people into the military. So there's a long history of basically saying, well, who are the people that I command and what resources can I get from them? And that's really where the census begins. But eventually, you know, it transitions into what we have today, which is a much less sort of extractive institution. It's something which is really used to kind of empower people, to give them political power or to give them fiscal resources from the federal government in the U.S.
You write about this in the book, but this idea of a census has always been politically charged, and this current census is no exclusion to that. We certainly saw it with the Supreme Court striking down the proposal to add a citizenship question to the census. So a two-part question, why is the census politically charged, and does it always have to be just by its very nature?
Yes, that's a good question. The census, I think, is inherently politically charged because decisions are made first about who is counted, and then secondly about how we classify them. So if you look back just through the history of the U.S. census, the first census was in 1790, shortly after the Constitution was agreed upon. And in the Constitution, it said that slaves would count as 3/5 of a person, basically. So so it would take five enslaved people to create the same political power, political weight in a state as three free people. So that was one immediate, you know, extremely political angle of the application of the census. And Native Americans, for the most part, were not counted at all. And so there's been these decisions through history about who would count and who wouldn't count. And now, today, those decisions are, generally speaking, less controversial. The U.S. Census is supposed to count everybody who is living here. So the only people who won't be responding are temporary visitors. And there are probably very few of those in the country right at the moment. But then there's the second aspect as well of how you classify people. And so some of the issues that have arisen around this 2020 census, for instance, on the race question, there was consideration early on to have a separate race category for people of Middle Eastern and North African descent. And in the end, that didn't end up on the final census. Some people are probably very, very comfortable and relaxed that that's not there. There are other people who would like to be recognized as a group and so are disappointed that that's not there. Similarly, the sex question on the census is a binary male or female, and some people will feel excluded by that. On the other hand, the way in which you can express your relationship to another person now includes same-sex partnership, which the previous census didn't. So there's all these decisions which have sort of identity and political implications.
In your mind, how can we perfect what we have in the sense of getting a true count, the sum of the people, as the title of the book would indicate?
Yeah, so I come at this as a statistician, and there's really two things you can do to improve census taking, at least given the kind of census that we have in the United States. One is just to do a better count, and that's really what the Census Bureau has been doing for sort of 40 or 50 years. It's been trying to do far more outreach, for instance, spending a lot more on advertising, getting community groups involved to try and make sure that everybody knows that when they receive this thing in the mail, it is important to respond to it, that there's benefits from that. And the Census Bureau, I think, has done a really good job of doing that, and that's one of the reasons that the kind of undercount percentage, the people who just are missed out in the census, has been falling over the years. But the other thing you can do is this kind of post-census adjustment. So a lot of countries, including the U.S., take a second survey after the main census is completed, and they kind of go around and ask people again, well, did you reply to the census? And if you didn't, they kind of similar details. But they just do it for a sample of the country. But using that information, one of the ways anyway that they figure out the undercount, they say, well, you're a couple of percent of people who just missed the census. And some countries actually use that to adjust the main total, to come up with a sort of adjusted total of number of people. And the United States hasn't done that. It's been very controversial. It was a big political issue in the 1990 and 2000 censuses. And I think there's no prospect at the moment. You don't hear anything about that happening. But I think from the perspective of a statistician, that is a reasonable thing to do, and it would increase the overall accuracy of the count.
When you think of the result, why is it so important? What do we get out of it? What is our hope, and what is the reality of the information that comes from this count?
Yeah, so there's a dry, political, technical answer to that. And then I think the human answer to that, too. So the dry answer, which is still very important, is that it determines the apportionment of Congress, which then has implications for Electoral College as well. And it's used by the federal government in some capacity to help direct federal grants, which are estimated to be $1.5 trillion every year to states and local communities. So that's really important. For me, there's this kind of more personal, more idealistic answer, which is that I like the idea that we have this institution whose purpose is to go around and kind of communicate to each person in society and say, you count, we'd like to know a little bit about you. You're part of this society. That's important. So that's the thing that's personally why I find this topic so interesting.
When you think of this, obviously we're talking about the census in the United States, but throughout the world, when you were researching this book and looking at it, what has fascinated you about both the information and how that data has been collected over the years?
Yeah, so the way the data has been collected over the years is interesting in its own right, in part because parts of it haven't changed at all, right? The idea of going and knocking on someone's door and then interviewing the people in that household to see how many there are and, you know, some personal information about them is exactly the same procedure, really, that happened in 1790 in the U.S., in 1801 in the U.K., and the 1700s in Sweden. It's an unchanging institution, and there aren't too many of those in government. But at the same time, parts of it have changed, right? So technology is far greater part of the census now than it was in the past. The U.S. census, as we know, is mostly online now. But even in, you know, low-income countries where people don't necessarily have laptops and iPads to go and do their census, you still have enumerators going house by house with, you know, smartphones that have GPS locations. You have people using satellite images to understand where the houses are and help them plan the census. So the process of taking a census is both, you know, timeless, but also reflects the technology of the day. In terms of the actual content of the census, I think it's just fascinating to think about how much more we know about humanity now than we knew, say, 100 or 150 years ago. Probably roughly 90% of people, I estimate, in the world will be counted during what the UN calls the 2020 census round, which is, you know, the few years before 2020, the few years after 2020. Nearly every country will take a census of some kind. So, you know, now we know that I think China and India will both have about 1.4 billion people at this census round. We know that the population in Africa is, you know, growing rapidly and is really the only part of the world that is still growing rapidly. All this information about the fellow people that we live on this planet with, I think, is really fascinating to inform our understanding.
The name of the book is The Sum of the People, How the Census Has Shaped Nations from the Ancient World to the Modern Age. Andrew Whitby is the author. Andrew, thank you very much for joining us this morning. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, The Sum of the People, it is published by Basic Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.